Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Tony, let's talk some Mets and Cubs.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. A radio.com sports station.
2-on-2-out tie game, 10th inning. It's 3-2 again. The pitch. Davis hammers it toward the left field wall. That's going to get down. Base hit. And one hops the fence and left. Conforto scores. And would you believe it? The Mets do it again. They score twice in the bottom of the 10th. And it's J.D. Davis with the walk-off to win it. The final score, 4-3.
Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Obviously, the Cubs tonight are taking on the Mets. It is a big series considering that the Mets are only two games behind the Cubs in the wild card standings. And the way that the Cubs played against the Nationals, they could use a win. And we know that winning on the road has been a struggle for them. But how have the Mets gotten here? I thought that I would talk with my counterpart at WFAN, Evan Roberts, who hosts Middays over there. You can follow him on Twitter at Evan Roberts, WFAN. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you at Alpamonte Ford. Evan, thanks for doing this. I appreciate you jumping on.
No problem. Let me just say this. The Mets need a win more than the Cubs do right now, all right? They just got swept, too, by the Braves. They're trailing the Cubs. So as desperate as you guys are, the Mets are more desperate.
For the Mets, basically, if they don't play Atlanta, everything seems to be fine. What are they, 5-11 against the Braves this year?
Oh, my God, yeah. It seems the all-star break. They have done a great job, mostly against bad teams, but they did sweep the Indians of three games. They beat the Nationals 2-3. The Braves have been the horror show, just like the late 90s. It feels like it's 1998, 1999 all over again. They lost 2-3 in Atlanta. They just got swept at home. So hopefully for them, not seeing the Braves until the final weekend of the year will be a good thing, because you're right, they've played well against everybody outside of Atlanta.
Yeah, what is it about Braves third baseman when they show up in Queens?
Oh, my God. What is it about any Brave? You know, whether it's Freddie Freeman and Josh Donaldson today or Chipper Jones and Brian Jordan 20 years ago, if we see the Atlanta Brave logo, that disgusting, awful logo, things go terribly bad. Dallas Keuchel looks like Tommy Glavine. It's incredible what the Braves have done to the Mets over the years.
Evan, how has this team gotten here where we are legitimately having conversations about the Mets making the playoffs, considering that it looked like a clown car show earlier on in the season?
You know, it's funny. Everything's changed. So I'll start with the major stuff. Their starting pitching, which was supposed to be their bread and butter, was mediocre for the most part. It's been a lot better. Jacob deGrom is pitching like a Cy Young Award winner. Noah Syndergaard has been completely different ever since the trade rumors have stopped after the trade deadline. He's pitched a lot better. Steven Matz has pitched a lot better. And then there are small things like their infield defense. You know, for the first 3 months of the year, their infield defense was awful. And now all of a sudden, Amed Rosario, who the Mets were openly talking about moving off of shortstop, is now defensively playing like a gold glover. So it's kind of small things that have just changed over the last few weeks. Their bullpen has gone from being the worst thing ever to being at least somewhat competent. It's still not a strength, but it's been a lot better than it was over the first few months of the season. So they've just overall, in like every aspect, they've just been better. And it really started after the trade deadline, after they made that deal for Marcus Stroman, which surprised me, surprised a lot of Mets fans, surprised a lot of people around baseball. The Mets acted as if they were in a pennant race, and then they started playing like they were in a pennant race.
I got to know, when the news came out that Phil Regan was going to take over as the pitching coach, What was your reaction? Because it's kind of antithetical thinking, oh, well, they're going to find this 82-year-old dude, this guy that his first manager was born like before the Civil War, like all of this stuff, and it worked. So what is he doing?
Well, you know what's funny? He may deserve a lot of credit, but I also think that guys are just performing better. You know what I mean? Like Noah Syndergaard was having a bad first half, but if you look at his resume before Phil Regan was here, 2016, 2017, the guy was very good. So I'm not necessarily sure that it was Regan, you know, pressing some kind of magical button that has improved him. Same thing with Steven Matthews. He's always shown flashes, but sometimes a change works. You know, back in 1999, way back when, the Mets fired Bobby Valentine's coaching staff, and all of a sudden the Mets got hot. You know what I mean? Like, so sometimes firing a manager or firing coaches sparks a team. I want to give Phil Regan credit. The guy's been around forever. I had no problem hiring him because of his age. I mean, age is just a number. Like, if the guy knows pitching and is willing to travel, you know, who cares if he's 95 years old? That doesn't bother me. I mean, there were certainly jokes made, but I always thought it was ridiculous. Like, who cares? I don't care if the pitching coach is 35, 85, 55, 75. But with a lot of the pitchers that have improved, they have already shown that they can pitch in this league. So I'm not sure if it was just, you know, Phil Regan doing anything or just the sign that, hey, if they could fire the pitching coach, who knows? Maybe the manager will be next. Maybe we will trade Noah Syndergaard. So I'm not sure if that specific move sparked things. But look, we've seen it throughout baseball history. Sometimes firing a coach or firing a manager can spark a baseball team.
Talking with Evan Roberts of The Fan in New York, my counterpart over at The Fan in New York, about the Mets and the Cubs. They will play tonight here on The Score. You can hear our pregame starting at 5:30 tonight. Looking at the Mets lineup and looking at the year that Pete Alonso has had, is it fair to say that it's not just the production but an infusion of energy with this Mets team because of what Alonso has done?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, he's the guy in the middle of the order that I would think that people fear, and like a true slugger. And the Mets haven't had a lot of true sluggers over the years outside of Darryl Strawberry, that was a really long time ago, and Mike Piazza. So, and the other thing that really helped is that there was this belief, especially because they're the Mets, that Pete Alonso wasn't going to make the team out of spring training for service time reasons, which we've seen around baseball. We've seen it with you guys, with Chris Bryan a few years ago. It's very common for teams to say, we don't want to lose the service time on him. And the Mets, shockingly, allowed him to make the team right out of the gate. And he earned it. You know, he had a very good spring training. And right from the get-go, he's proven he belongs. Right from the get-go, he's been that slugger in the middle of the order. Now, he hasn't been as great over the last few weeks. He's been slumping. He's still hitting his home runs, but his average is down. His on-base is down. Hopefully, now that he's tied the all-time Met record for home runs in a single season, he can relax. But he's been, you know, a stalwart in the middle of this order. He plays every single day at first base. His defense isn't great, but it's been better than what was advertised. And he has been, you know, one of those rare true sluggers in Met history. We haven't seen a lot of them over the years.
How close was Mickey Callaway to getting fired?
Oh, man, I could have sworn he was going to be fired five times already. And the assumption was Jim Riggleman would just move over from bench coach and become the manager. So I'm actually surprised. If you would have asked me in April and May and June and even early July, I figured that one of the many brutal losses and brutal managerial decisions that Mickey made would cost him his job, especially since the GM didn't hire him. I mean, Brody Van Wagenen inherited Mickey Callaway, which you would think would lead him to be even quicker on the trigger to get rid of him. So I'm still surprised he's the manager, and I'm also not convinced he's going to be the manager next year. Obviously, the way this season plays out will play a part of that, but I'd almost, if you ask me right now, is Mickey Callaway managing them in 2020, I would still lean towards the answer being no.
It's a great experiment that they're doing with Van Wagenen as the GM. How would you assess how it's gone, and do you think that he's got a grasp of how to do the job?
No, I think he's actually done a really bad job. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, he's made, if you look at the moves he made, most of them have been colossal failures, not just failures. Colossal failures. He's trading top prospect and taking on Robbie Cano's contract and getting back Edwin Diaz. Edwin Diaz has been an unmitigated disaster. He's not the closer of this team anymore. He's banged up right now. He's got a 5.5 ERA. He gives up a home run every time he's out there. Robinson Cano was awful, and now he's hurt. So that trade is an F. Now, things can change, obviously. Edwin Diaz can turn it all around. Robbie Cano can come back. But in this moment, that trade was an unmitigated disaster. He signed Jed Lowry. Jed Lowry hasn't played yet. Jed Lowry's had 56 different injuries. He's still rehabbing. I don't even know if he exists anymore. I give him a lot of credit for trading for J.D. Davis. That has worked out incredibly well. He signed Wilson Ramos. But for the most part, the reason why the Mets are here are guys that Brody Van Wagenen inherited. So, I mean, am I convinced he's a capable general manager? No. I mean, why would I be? Obviously, we have to see how he's done with the draft and what the farm system looks like over the next couple of years in developing talent. But as of right now, the Mets' success is more because of Sandy Alderson and what he left Brody Van Wagenen, as opposed to Brody Van Wagenen, you know, making these magical moves.
What's it been like to cover a team that's run by a former agent?
It's been typical of the Mets. You know, it's really, when Brody came in, Brody tried to say, everything's going to be different. We're going to be positive. We're going to be this. Come get us. That was his saying to the rest of the National League East. And the truth is, I think we talk about the Mets and Met fans talk about the Mets exactly the same way. They're owned by the same guys. As fans, we're always waiting for the other shoe to drop and always waiting for something incredibly negative to happen. So Brody hasn't really changed anything. And, you know, it's going to be interesting over the next few years to see if he figures this out and how the Brody experiment goes. In a lot of ways, it's too early to tell because, like I said, you know, you go through some of the moves he's made, some of them have been awful. But in fairness to a general manager, it takes a long time to see, you know, what they do. I mean, look at Sandy Alderson. You know, for Sandy, Met fans ripped him all the time. And now as we sit here, we look at what he left this organization, and he looks a lot better than what, you know, maybe we saw 3 or 4 years ago. So I think the feeling amongst Met fans and the feeling here in New York is very similar about the Mets. They draw a lot of excitement, but we're all waiting for something really, really awful to happen.
I have a kinship with you on that because I'm a White Sox fan. So it's funny because I heard Seinfeld talking about this on, I think it was Mark Maron's podcast somewhere. He was talking about being a Met fan and how there is that always that dread. And it's hard to believe because you've seen so much bad before. And as a White Sox fan, I was walking around the South Side going, I know that fan. I am that fan. So I feel like I can relate. But considering how good things have gone over the last 6 weeks, is there a level of optimism amongst Mets fans that they can complete this thing and push their way into the playoffs?
Well, first of all, let me say this with a lot of peace and love. You won a World Series in 2005, okay? The Mets haven't won a World Series since 1986. I was 3. That doesn't even count in my lifetime. So, number one, we have no kinship whatsoever. When I have a championship, when I win a title, we'll have a kinship. Until then, right now, the city of Chicago with your baseball teams, between the Cubs winning a few years ago and the White Sox winning in 2005, that was so long ago. Give me a freaking break. It was like 5 weeks ago. That's number one. As far as our optimism, I think our optimism is that we're in it because a month ago, this felt irrelevant. The Mets were going to have another irrelevant August, irrelevant September. So I think it's exciting that these games matter. It's exciting that City Field should have a nice atmosphere with the Cubs in town. But right now, like you ask me as a Mets fan, do I think the Mets are going to full swing make the playoffs? I lean towards no. You know, so I don't think there's an optimism that they're going to make the playoffs, but I definitely think there's a lot of excitement and happiness that at least they're in it. But you know what? Now that they're in it, you want to win it. You know what I mean? Like, okay, great. They went on this big run. They got back in the wild card race. That's fantastic. Now you got to go win. I don't think overall there's an optimism that the Mets are going to get to that wild card game. But, hey, we've been wrong before. I mean, 2015 was a stunning year. I mean, after Wilmer Flores is traded, then he's not trading. He's crying on the field. The Mets are losing to the Padres. We all thought the Mets were done. They obviously trade for Cespedes. They go on an incredible run, and they win the freaking pennant. So I didn't see that coming in 2015. Hopefully 2019 will bear similar fruits.
So would it be equally disappointing if they play great and then they don't make the playoffs versus the way the season was going and them clearly not making the playoffs? So would it be like they have something in front of you and then they're taking it away from you?
Well, you're asking me, what do I prefer? I mean, look, I prefer that they're in a pennant race, but if they don't win a world championship, yeah, I'm going to go that far. If they don't win a World Series, which means their season ends with either them losing their final game in the postseason or just not making the playoffs, it's a disappointment. You know, I was joking with you earlier, except I wasn't joking. The Mets haven't won anything since 1986. They've been in two World Series in my lifetime. For me, and I think for a lot of Mets fans, if they don't win a World Series, we ain't going to be happy. So that may sound unrealistic. That may sound crazy. Like, come on, you can't expect to win the World Series. The point is, I think for us Mets fans, that's what we're waiting for. We're waiting for a championship. And I think after a while, when you've got, you know, near losses, losing in the World Series in 2015, losing in a wild card game in 2016, the run that they had in the late 90s, early 2000s, 2006, losing Game 7 at home, you got to win. So what's better? Sure, you'd rather be relevant. You'd rather be playing big games. You'd rather be in a pennant race. But they got to win. They have to win a championship or else, you know, because, hey, one thing I've learned, and I learned this from your city, because my wife always says, oh, baby, don't worry. The Mets will win someday. Really? What if I'm the Cubs? What if I'm the White Sox? What if it's 108 years and we don't see anything? So I can't take anything for granted that, oh, don't worry, eventually the Mets are going to win. As you guys know full well, eventually doesn't always happen.
It's true. It for all those people that were inside the 88-year window for the White Sox and the 108-year window for the Cubs, and that didn't have a World Series, I'm sure that they're hopefully looking down from heaven happy, but they would have preferred it to happen while they were alive. Evan, this was delightful. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, and hopefully we can stick a broom with you guys and take three straight games against the Cubbies. Let's go, Mets.
Don't do that to me, because you know what that means? That means that my shows over that time period are just going to be horrendous because they've been swept by the Nationals, and then you know how it is. You know that people are going to go crazy if the Cubs get swept.
Yeah, but you know what? Just play those 2016 highlight videos, and everyone will feel better.
Okay. All right, Evan, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
No problem. Have a good one.
That's Evan Roberts from The Fan. I feel like Tony just got that guy out of Central Casting. I don't even know if that's the real Evan Roberts. He couldn't have been more WFAN Mets fan than that. That was fantastic. So great. We need to take a timeout. There's some other stuff I want to get into, and we'll talk a little bit about the Bears. We'll hear from Chris Emma. More to come. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score.
Kicking toward the north end zone at Soldier Field. 3-for-3 on the day. 10 seconds to go. Parkey lines it up. O'Donnell on one knee. Gives him a look. Extends his right arm. Scales sends it back. Placement made. Kick by Parkey from 43. And it hit the upright. It is no good on the crossbar. And the Eagles are celebrating here at Soldier Field.
By rule.
43 yards, no good. 16-15. Hit the left upright.
Philadelphia's ball. First down at the 33-yard line.
Highlight courtesy of our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Tom Thayer so mad he couldn't even talk. Hall of Famer Jeff Joniak with the call on that. Going to be inducted into the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame coming up in a couple of weeks. Congratulations to Jeff. This is definitely well earned. And I know what you're thinking. Lawrence, why did you do that? Why would you have Tony just rip that healing scab off? Well, because we're trolls, but also because there's a little bit of news in the way of the kicking competition. Not with the Bears specifically, because Eddie Pinheiro is their guy for at least another preseason game, and maybe they figure out that he's going to be the person that's going to be kicking for them going on. I do think that it's interesting that over the last couple of days that the story about Carli Lloyd has gotten some traction. And you're like, wait, what? Carli Lloyd, who plays for the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, she's 37. I didn't realize she was that old. But then again, I guess we've been watching Carli Lloyd for forever. Carly Lloyd was invited to the Eagles-Ravens joint practice. I guess the special teams coach in Baltimore knows her from way back and brought her out, and they did the narrow goalpost. They didn't do just the regular. They did the narrow. Now, she missed a couple of kicks from 55. She also nailed one from 55. That video has been seen over 1.5 million times of her kicking. And obviously, kicking is kicking, right? People are like, well, do you think that you could do this? Now, to be fair, on her attempt, she took, I think it was 3.5 steps, where you're probably not going to get that type of time. But that's also how she's been trained to kick. This from ProFootballTalk.com. The headline reads, Carly Lloyd thinks she could kick field goals and do it well. This wasn't Florio and this wasn't Michael. This was a Darren Gant who wrote this. Darren writes, Carly Lloyd is already a star, but the more she thinks about her just for fun visit to the Eagles-Ravens practice last week, the more she thinks she could actually kick field goals in the NFL. The U.S. Women's National Team veteran, who has 2 World Cup titles and 2 FIFA Women's World Player of the Year awards, told Peter King of NBC's Football Morning in America that she's confident she could do the job. Quote, I know I could actually probably do it. Put on the helmet, strap on the pads, go for it. The mindset I have, I think with practice, I know I have to work on my steps and my technique, but I think I could do it and do it well. It could be a huge pivotal moment. There's no reason why a woman couldn't do this. And I actually invite the pressure. I love the pressure. When I have to nail something, shooting hoops, axe throwing, kicking a field goal, that is the moment I live for and want. It comes down to mind training the mind. It's worth having some conversations about. With practice and someone showing me, I know I can do it. I have one of the most accurate shots in our game. Big thing would be getting used to the big boys out there, but nothing scares me. You hold yourself back if you're afraid. What's the worst that could happen? I don't make the team. Let's just say I did try. Maybe I changed the landscape a lot. Close quote from Carly Lloyd. Now, there was some reports out there that a team, it was like an unnamed team, was like, come and kick on Thursday, because everyone's going to play their final preseason game and be done with all this nonsense. But she can't, because I think the U.S. women are playing a friendly that day. Tony, if I said to you that the Bears were going to bring in Carly Lloyd to see if she can kick, would your mind be open to being convinced that she could do it?
Probably not, being honest. Those are some massive dudes. And, well, 2 things. What did Bears fans do to Cody Parkey after he missed that kick?
They ran him out of town on a rail.
I couldn't imagine them doing that to Carly
Lloyd. To American hero, yeah. Carly Lloyd. It would be awful if that happened.
It'd be so
to
bad.
American hero, Carly Lloyd.
And again, those guys are massive. And if a muff, you know, hold, or she has
that's
to
not on
recover,
her.
She has to recover like
a botch snap.
Yeah, a botch snap.
But I mean, she's tough too. Give me the height and weight on a Carly Lloyd compared to Cody Parkey.
I probably should have said first, I'm not really for kickers anyway. I think they should try and phase kicking out of the game in general. But yeah, those would probably be my 2 concerns.
What's Carly Lloyd? Like maybe like 5'9", 150 pounds?
It says here she's 5'7". It does not list a weight. And then Parkey is 6'1", 193.
All right, so that's significant. That's significant. That's a significant difference. There are a lot of kickers that... go ahead, Mike.
It says here she's 144. I was telling Tony, I'm like, she can't be like 110, 120.
Are you out of your mind?
141. I'm sorry, 141.
That's dude, what it says. Sometimes when you meet
when you meet some of the athletes, some of the female athletes, you got to understand, like, these are superheroes. Like, they're big ladies. I'll give you a perfect example. Holly Holm. I follow Holly Holm on Instagram. You watch Holly Holm on Instagram, she's ripped, right? Like, she is shredded. She's doing ab exercises that are unbelievable. Holly Holm walks around at 163 pounds. I want to say she's 5'11", 163, which makes her bigger than Bernstein.
But I also think Bernstein couldn't be an NFL kicker.
Well, neither can Holly Holm because she doesn't kick for a living. It's
well,
interesting.
Kinda.
Yeah, you're right. She does, but she doesn't kick that way for a living. Maybe that's the next thing. Let's see if Holly Holm can kick. Because she's not running away from any physical contact on the field.
She knocked out an adult female with a kick. So
yeah, put and ended her. Let's be honest. She kind of ended her career. Because the moment that we all realized that Ronda wasn't the baddest woman on the planet anymore was kind of, and then Amanda Nunes was like, no, I got this. Watch this. Pow! You can go on to the WWE now. We'll do the real fighting over here. Not that this is, I know we've taken a little bit of a left turn, but can I just say, I feel like Amanda Nunes has not gotten her due. And I remember when she was getting ready to fight Ronda, I was in Vegas, and I remember the promo, and they were treating Amanda Nunes like she was nobody.
That may just be an American bias.
Maybe. I think there's all sorts of biases that were going on with it. And then what happened? Ronda got her lights turned out. Good night. But, I mean, as crazy as the Bears kicking competition is gone, would it be that crazy for Matt Nagy to be like, yeah, we brought in Carly Lloyd?
I mean, considering that SI piece.
That's what I'm saying.
No, it wouldn't be weird.
It wouldn't be crazy at all. If I'm, like, driving in the house, I'm like, is that Carly? Did Carly Lloyd just leave here? Did she just sign a deal? I'd be all for it, man.
But remember, she's also kicking without pads and everything.
Right.
So I think that's a game changer when you throw the pads on there.
I agree. And I think that she understands that too. She probably understands that better than anybody. I'd have to work on my steps. I couldn't be a 3.5-step kicker. Like, the rush is going to be there by then. And I haven't kicked in pads before. Still, with the narrow goalpost to hit from 55, leg strength, I don't think, is the issue here. You know, this isn't Kathy Ireland. How many people got that? Tony doesn't even get that reference. You even know what I'm talking about, Tony?
Kathy Ireland.
Oh, here we go.
Jeez. She's an athlete?
No, far from it.
All right.
So the game's now just over? We're done guessing.
Yeah.
Like, that's completely it.
Yep.
Okay. Sometimes, man, just you take one shot at it and you're done. There's a movie called Unnecessary Roughness. Sinbad was like the star player on the team, which tells you why it was a comedy. And she was the kicker on the team. Was Scott Bakula the quarterback of that team? I feel like he was the quarterback of that team. I think that he was like the old dude who got hurt and then still had eligibility left, and he came back and quarterbacked the team. If I'm remembering my Unnecessary Roughness plot lines as well as I think I am.
Never mind. That show's called Necessary Roughness with John Stamos.
That's different. Wasn't it Unnecessary Roughness?
No, it says Necessary Roughness.
It was Necessary Roughness.
No, okay. I think what you're talking about is Unnecessary Roughness.
Right.
The John Stamos one is Necessary Roughness.
But wasn't Scott Bakula the quarterback? The guy from Quantum Leap and NCIS New Orleans.
It says Bakula is right? One of the stars, yes.
Mike Chen, give me the cast of Unnecessary Roughness.
All right.
When was this movie made?
This is like 92 or something?
91.
91.
I wasn't born.
I know. We all know, Tony.
You got Bakula as Paul Blake. You have Hector Elizondo as Coach Ed Gennaro. Robert Loggia as Coach Robert Loggia as Coach Wally Rigg. Harley Kane Kozak, Dr. Suzanne Carter, Larry Miller, Dean Philip Elias, Sinbad, Andre Krim, Fred Dalton Thompson, Carver Purcell.
Fred Dalton Thompson was in that movie?
Yes.
The Senator?
Rob Schneider.
Of course he was.
Chuck Niederman. Jason Bateman. I didn't know he was in this movie. As Jarvis Edison.
That's right.
See if there's
and Kathy Ireland.
Yeah, I think those are the only other. Oh, Chris Berman was in it as himself.
Of course he was.
Butkus was in it. Earl Campbell.
No!
Roger Craig. Ben Davidson. Tony Dorsett. Evander Holyfield. Jim Kelly. Jerry Rice. Herschel Walker. Randy White. See if there's any other.
Here's a question for you. If I did an interview with Dick Butkus and only talked about his television and movie career, would people be interested in it? If I only talked to him about My Two Dads and Hang Time and being in Unnecessary Roughness, and wasn't he in Any Given Sunday? Wasn't he the coach of the Chicago team in Any Given Sunday? Like if I did that, if I only talked to Dick Butkus about his life in Hollywood, would anyone be interested in that interview?
He was also in MacGyver, so yes.
Like the movie MacGyver or on the TV show MacGyver?
The TV show MacGyver.
I think that's what I call Lauren Majera on the interview on my House of L podcast interview with her. If you haven't checked it out, you need to. It's amazing because she does all the MacGyver stuff when she's out in the wild.
His IMDb would suggest that he never played football.
Dick Butkus?
Yeah.
What? Run! Give me a couple of the Dick Butkus IMDb stuff.
He played in this thing called Teddy Bear's Picnic in 2001.
Okay. It's fine.
Hang Time, a TV series. The show called Malibu, California. Any Given Sunday. Coach. Burke's Law. Let's Kill All the Lawyers.
Okay.
MacGyver, like you said, Necessary Roughness. Gremlins 2.
Dick Butkus was in Gremlins 2? How did I miss that?
As Dick Butkus.
Of course, because obviously.
My Two Dads, Spontaneous Combustion, Crash Course, Growing Pains, Time Out for Dad, Matlock.
Wow, he was on Growing Pains and Matlock?
Night Court.
Night Court, by the way, I submit Night Court as one of the greatest television theme songs ever.
I agree. I've heard that one. Yeah.
It's funky. It's real funky.
Murder, She Wrote. Yeah. He had a sports career.
Well, I joke with Thomas Jones about this all the time. Because if you look, Thomas Jones ran for 10,000 yards. I think maybe even 12,000 yards in the league. In the NFL. Okay? His Wikipedia page says Thomas Jones is an American actor. And former football player. At some point, he's just going to be Thomas Jones, the actor, which is amazing. We need to take a break. All right, so Tony, book Butkus and tell him we're not going to talk football at all. At all. Actually, I take that back. I would have to ask him Doug Buffone questions. But other than that, we're not talking any football with Dick Butkus. We're just going to ask him about Hang Time. Because winning together. Hang Time. Back after this on The Score. All right, everyone is all for the Dick Butkus no football interview. So let's make that happen. We can talk to him about all sorts of stuff. Chris Emma has been doing incredible work for us as our correspondent up at Bears camp. As the Bears get ready for their final preseason game. Thank baby Jesus that they are almost done with the preseason. I can't take it anymore.
Gotta love preseason football.
No, I don't. Emma files this report from Hallis Hall.
With the preseason nearing its conclusion and game week only days away, Matt Nagy and the Bears have divided practice apart this week. On Monday afternoon, the first team offense and defense went to work inside the Walter Payton Center while the second and third teams were outside on field two. It's part of how the Bears are balancing preparation for the Packers with those final evaluations for the bottom of the roster. Among those practicing inside the Payton Center was wide receiver Anthony Miller, who has been mending an ankle sprain the last 2 weeks. Miller practiced in a limited fashion Monday, but left no doubt in saying he will be ready for week one. Miller is hopeful for big things in his second season, not only because his left shoulder is now healthy, but because of his comfort in the offense.
Especially since I know exactly what I'm doing each and every play. You know, it's when you're good mentally out there, you can play much faster. And I think you're going to see a different me this year. You can do everything with no hesitation, with speed, and, you know, you can just be consistent. And I think that's what I'm going to be this year.
The Bears also welcome Mac outside linebacker Aaron Lynch to practice on Monday, albeit in a limited role. Lynch has been battling a shoulder injury since training camp. Nagy and the Bears did reveal that veteran tackle TJ Clemmings will miss the entire season with a quad injury he suffered in Saturday's preseason game. With Clemmings out and Rashad Coward still recovering from an elbow injury, the Bears are left with uncertain depth at tackle. Alex Barrs, an undrafted rookie out of Notre Dame, will now see reps at left tackle. Nagy admitted the Bears will be developing their tackle depth as the season progresses.
Developing is a good word. I think we're at that spot now. Rashad Coward is a kid that, you know, moving over from defense, he is developing. He is arrow up. Then he gets hurt. And so now we got to continue to get him back so that we can keep developing him and seeing what he can do. But there's competition there. Sometimes, like the other day, when Alex Barrs goes in there and starts playing tackle, you see some good things, and it just, you never know, you know, some, you know, you do or you don't have it, and that opened us up a little bit to seeing some flexibility with him.
The Bears are back on the practice field this afternoon. They wrap up the preseason Thursday night at Soldier Field against the Tennessee Titans. For continued coverage of the Bears, log on to 670thescore.com.
Great stuff again from Chris Emma. Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football, his alma mater, by the way. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, hosts Ohio State, Iowa, Purdue, and more. Tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. This segment is sponsored by Nature Valley Oats and Honey Crunch Bars. When we come back, I'm going to give you some Cubs tickets. If you want to go see the Cubs and the Brewers, I got you. And I'll talk with McNeil and Parkins next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.